All right. We are here, we are Galexis, and welcome. Welcome to Money Magic, the workshop. Normally, when we speak to people in events and groups, in question and answer sessions, or in private sessions, we normally don't get all that frequently the request to look at, what is my money issue? What is it that holds me back? But most of the time is, why isn't this manifestation working? Why am I not getting aligned? Why is it not flowing? Why is it not happening? But when we were looking at the images of you, we discovered that there is a certain overview that you must be aware of. But we wish to reinforce it. We wish to, in a sense, help you recognize it, because that's what we've got to bust, a resistance to money. Now, it's not really that you have a conscious, deliberate resistance to money. But you see, you didn't come here into physical manifestation, into physical form, to play with money, per se. You came because you wanted to explore creating. You wanted to explore physical plane dynamics. You wanted to feel with the senses. That was fascinating to you. You also wanted to create without knowing who you were actually are. As we've said many times before, if you really knew who you were, if you knew that you were a divine being and you knew that you had all the power and that you could create whatever illusion you wanted, creation would be a snap. But you decided to make it harder. You know, it's like a three-legged race or tying your hand behind your back when you're dueling or whatever. You know, it's kind of giving yourself a handicap, but you thought that it would be an intriguing kind of challenge, is to forget who you were and learn how you were, or learn how you are, rather, by opening up to creating, by using the natural tendencies of the human species in its spiritual channels and manifestations, to awaken yourself and to learn how to create from scratch, from whatever place of awareness you are. You thought that was really going to be fun. Boy, were you surprised. It's like, no, it was supposed to be more fun than this. Yes, it was. But you also had a desire to experience everything. Not just the fun of creation, you decided to experience pain and suffering and limitation and scarcity and all sorts of stuff. You decided to experience control and manipulation and victimhood. You decided to experience all the darkest places of shame and trauma and humiliation and failure. You wanted to find how far away you could get from the experience of knowing yourself as the divine. It was a curiosity on your part, this illusion of separation from the divine. And you wanted to take that individuality as far as it could go. But unfortunately, your culture got stuck in the shame. It got stuck in the forgetting. It got stuck in trying to cope with the shame and the pain, rather than to heal it, to lift out of it and reclaim your divinity. So your training, your background, unless you were a very rare, fortunate person, was through parents who had no idea who they were either. Maybe they had a little bit of a hint. Maybe they went so far as to say, I'm a child of God. But they didn't know what that really meant. If you really believed that you're a child of God, wouldn't it logically follow that you would grow up to be God? But they don't think that way. I'm a child of God, but I'm perennially, forever a child of God. There's no way for me to get out of childhood. I'll never be more than a child of God. And of course, God is this old man with a beard, right? So it's a, and it also is a very judgmental God. Kind of distant. And has lots of rules and regulations you have to follow. So you stay in the child mode with God as a parent. Not always a very loving parent. Sometimes it seems to be a very harsh parent, punishing parent. And this has stuck your cultures. All the religions of the world have that kind of powerlessness, child orientation. Now, the mystic branches of religions, on the other hand, had a certain amount of freedom to discover the divine within, to know more of who you are. And those who have followed the mystic path have had more flexibility. But this is what you came for, is to explore your individuality, to come out of your own darkness and your own ignorance, to create and to come into the fullness of your ownership of your divinity as a fully realizing, conscious, aware creator. In other words, to grow up into God yourself. To know that you are God, maybe not yet aware of it, not knowing how to realize and utilize that. But that's why you're here. You're not here to make money. But once you got here, in the ignorance of your parents, of your culture, many of you got lost. And you had to adopt what beliefs were available to you. You went through childhood and adolescence into your young adulthood, already twisted, distorted in your culture, making money, God. Making money the greatest thing. Making money the arbiter of value. If you don't have money, you're nothing. If you have a lot of money, you must be important. Or valuable. Or significant. So people, you have been trapped into a money trap. Diverted. And those of you on a spiritual path have felt the pain of this because somehow you knew that you weren't here to focus on money. You were here to give, to receive, to grow, to love. Somewhere inside yourself, you held that flame of knowing, which has kept you throughout your life. But what it has meant is that by knowing that, you couldn't fall for the trap completely. Some part of you just couldn't fit in, couldn't just totally be there. You couldn't chop yourself into a little piece and ignore the call of your soul, the drumbeat of your growth process of your journey. And so you resisted money. You didn't like money. It was a necessary evil. Or maybe you said, well, if I could just make a whole bunch of it, then I wouldn't have to worry about it or think about it anymore. Or maybe I can find ways to live without much of it and just kind of keep it at arm's length. You kind of judged it. You kind of saw it as some kind of manipulative commodity, that if you had it, you could possibly fall into manipulation of others, or it would corrupt you. Or perhaps if you had money, that maybe you could buy a certain amount of valuable energy, valuable things, people would love you. You built up a whole bunch of negative beliefs or assumptions and stuff about it. But what happened in there Or is that the dynamic of your relationship with money became, in a sense, shackled on you? It made it harder for you as a spiritual person to make money. If you notice, when you look out, people who are very spiritually focused, with few exceptions, now there are some exceptions, but for the most of them, they've had to go through many years of financial struggle, not seeming to fit into the mainstream, not being able to get support from the mainstream, not being able to connect with the popular culture. Well, it's time for that to change. It's time for you to be able to get support from the mainstream, because you created it and co-created it as part of your playground of consciousness to engage with the world. You came here to give and receive, and money is a symbol of exchange. It has no real value in itself. It is a temporary establishment of value balance for the purposes of exchange. And we say it's temporary because it differs in different countries, how what you can buy with the same amount of money. And it changes value. There's money markets where money changes value. And it can change whole trade balances. Money is an exchange energy. You came to exchange energy. You didn't come just to hang out and not give anything or not receive anything. Giving and receiving is natural to you as a spiritual being. And so what you came as a concept with is that you would give of yourself and then you would receive for yourself. It's the way reality is actually set up. It's the intention of your reality, of your culture, is that you give and for your giving and then you receive. It is you and your culture who put upon it that you have to give to make money, which is what you receive, so that you can have something. It makes your giving forced giving. Forced giving is called earning, right? And many of you have many gifts because you are very spiritually what you'd call advanced. Otherwise, if you weren't, you wouldn't be so fascinated in the spiritual side. You wouldn't be fascinated with metaphysics and how reality functions. You wouldn't even have the interest to ponder any of that. You'd be so busy trying to be popular at work. You'd be really focusing all your energy to make sure that your husband or wife or lover is doing what you want them to do, to fulfill your fantasy. If you look around, how many codependent relationships do you see? These are not spiritually based. They're based on, I gotta manipulate, I gotta get what I can. It's a rebellion against earning. I wanna get stuff for free. I wanna get something for nothing. I don't wanna give. I'm tired of being forced to give. And when you felt that, it was hurtful to you that you were being forced to give, so that you could receive something you really were not intrinsically interested in order to survive. It felt like you were trapped. And what it created also for you as you entered adolescence, where you began to think about what are your interests and what are you going to do with your life, it messed up that opportunity to a certain extent for you to be able to find the path of what it is you want to do that is your own glory as a spiritual being, that you can share with others, and that you would do anyway, whether there's money or not, it is what you would want to do. And many of you had difficulty finding what that track, what that channel was. You were sidetracked so much by the devaluing of yourself and the higher envaluement of money. So you began to focus, well, what can I do for money? Or who can I marry for money? How can I get this money thing? Because if I can get this money thing, then I can do what I want to do. Some of you are very fortunate to have gifts and talents that you could corral, focus, and direct early enough in life to set a pathway of your giving. That's something that you could enjoy, something that would be delightful for you. And even so, by the time you leave your 20s, you've installed your inner slave driver to force you to follow through on it and do it until you're tired of it, until you're sick of it, because you have to survive. So many of you enter occupations or do things that are just so wonderful and creative, and you don't make money for them, and so you have to abandon them. Or you do make money for them, and then you get stuck in the pressure of continuing and maintaining doing the same thing over and over and over again. Then you burn out. You get tired. You want to change careers. And now you're back to square one. What do I do for money now? All of you have probably been there at some point. Does that sound familiar? This is how the energy of your soul, of your spirit, of your divine self got sidetracked by money. So it is understandable that there is some resentment about money. Resentment that it has to be so damn important. Because if you were to live in the culture that was suitable and reflective of you as a spiritual being, you would be doing what gives yourself joy, what makes your heart sing, and you would want to do it, and you want to give it. You'd want to give it freely. Knowing that somewhere on the other end of the spectrum, other people are out there wanting to give freely too. And they will give freely to you what you would like to have, that you don't create, that you don't do, and you would give them freely. It would be an exchange. Yes, but it wouldn't be a forced exchange. It wouldn't be an exchange that was nailed down to particular dollar value and significance with survival at risk if you don't get enough of these exchanges. Without pressure and demand, it would be a place where you exchange soul energy. Now, you've been there. And that's why it's so unsettling for you to be in a culture that does not have any option or possibility for that. Because you know what it is. You have felt it. You've been there. Where you've been before in other dimensions, higher dimensions, and perhaps even in other planets. There are systems that are based on this. And in a way, you want to create a life in which you can live this frequency and never have to be concerned about survival again. The reason you don't have to be concerned about survival is because you came with a divine plan. You didn't come to abandon yourself. You didn't come to fail. You didn't come to become the street beggar. You just didn't come for that. You came to discover the glory of creation and who you are. And from that place to enter in to powerful reality creation of your own design. And here is where you are now, at a crossroads, at a powerful point in the evolution of the planet and the cultures therein. It is a time of great change, and you are the ones creating a new template. A new template for money would be greatly appreciated by everybody on the planet. As you notice, the money systems as they are in place don't really work, except for the elite few. It is said that Wall Street people, once they've been bailed out, are making more money than ever, but leaving the majority of people poorer. But do they care? No, they're obsessed. They're obsessed. And you see, if you get obsessed with money, thinking that that's your goal, that's your end, that will make you happy, that will give you everything you need and everything you want, and then finally, you'll be safe. You'll be secure. Finally, you'll be free. Finally, you'll be empowered. Finally, you can love your life. You'll find you'll never, ever have enough money. There'll never be enough for you. However, if you, those of you who are part of the great change, who are feeling the call of creation, your own creation, in fact, look within you, you'll find that somehow, some way, you already have enough money. Now you want more. There's nothing wrong with it. You have enough. You will survive. Can you trust that? Can you trust that you're not going to run out and be the beggar on the street? Can you trust that you and your unseen friends, you and your crew, you and your council got together before you came into this lifetime, laid out the broad strokes of the lifetime, showed you the doorway to your freedom, your divine joy, and said, you're going to find this pathway through the darkness into the light. And for you to be able to know what this path is, to, in a sense, blaze the trail and share it with others on your planet, you have to get into the darkness. You have to really get into the dark stuff so that you find your way out and you can lead your world. So you got stuck in the money trap with everybody else. But at this particular time on the planet, the great transition time, it is a time for you to begin to realize, hey, you know, this is part of the plan. I can trust this plan. I can trust that I'm not going to crash and burn. I can trust that I'm not going to abandon myself and be a failure. That I'm not going to remain in the illusion of total separation. I'm not going to remain in resistance to all the resources and the bounty that the world offers just because I'm afraid to receive it, or I'm afraid that I have to work too hard to earn it, or that somehow or another I am one of these weird spiritual people finding a new way and that the mainstream will reject me, will turn their back on me, that I can't receive from the mainstream, from the consensus people, from the non-spiritual people. Yeah, it's time for you to receive from the mainstream. It's time for you to belong to the mainstream and change it. Not to avoid it. Not to avoid dealing with money. It's time to look at what this God is and bust it. It's time to free yourself from the chains of the money trap and find your dynamic pathway of doing. Yes, there is things you want to do. Many people, and particularly even more women than men, are trained to defer to others and to support others in what they do and not to be selfish and think of yourself. But to serve, that's the highest. Many cultures, a woman's highest job is to serve her husband. That's the highest thing that a woman can do. Unfortunately, there's no consideration given, well, what would the woman like to do? Would she, what if she had her own druthers? What would she like to do? Because she came to do something. Does she have to do this because she has to earn her survival? Does she have to do this to earn approval and therefore her support? You are part of an adventurous group of people, men and women, who are busting the mold. It's scary. But if you can trust the divine plan, you'll be just fine. Because if you can trust the divine plan, you can rely upon energy, magic, spirit. You can rely upon your imagination and your power. You can be free. Last night we talked about charisma and presence. And we pointed out that when you are realized as who you are, when you are radiant as the spiritual person that you are, loving your life and wanting to be you more than anything, and being able to do what you want to do because you're free as a human being, it is so magnetically attractive to others that you can get support if you'll do it. But many people, and as we were mentioning, women, trained to defer, lost their track, lost a dynamic track of their doing, which is a masculine expression, is doing. And they lost their track of what they wanted to give, of what they would like to do, and have wandered. Some of you have wandered a long time figuring out, well, what can I do? And you would get into something, and then you would get into something else, and you would do this, and then you would support somebody doing their thing, and then you would... And not being able to get your dynamic track together. And men, trapped by the man code, which said a man's value is determined by how much money he makes, how much he has in the bank, how he looks, what he drives, etc., etc. Cruel. It's cruel to men who have really no desire for the fancy roadster. They much rather be meditating. They much rather be walking in the woods, hiking in wilderness, or something else, or creating. Of course, men are encouraged to have a channel of doing that can be lucrative. But also, men are terrified that if they fail, they're going to be so low in the pecking order that nobody's going to want to be with them, nobody's going to support them, nothing's going to happen, and they're going to have people wanting to lean on them to be supported. Men are trapped in the pecking order, positioning themselves with other men to find where they stand, how much leverage they have, how much power they have in the world. It doesn't work for men either. There are a lot of really unhappy men out there. Witness all the high blood pressure, heart attacks, all the problems that it is well known how men face in the high stress. And now, of course, women in that high stress environment as well. Pushing and driving with the slave driver saying, you've got to make money so that you can achieve these forms, these manifestations, these materializations that are going to make you happy. The slave driver says, I will keep cracking the whip over you. I will keep prodding you with guilt and fear. I will make you so terrified that you're going to be poor, that you will abandon your creativity and you will go and grab money wherever you can get it. You will burn yourself out, earning, earning, earning. It's time for that to go. Time for the slave driver to go. Now, you as a child had an experience about money at some point. The one who channels us had an experience about money that really set her on a twisted path. Money was just, you know, whatever. I asked for some money and parents would give some money. Parents weren't terribly disciplined about it, so she didn't have to do house chores to earn money. And if that was the case, she just wouldn't do it, and I'll forego whatever it is. Money's not that important. I don't want to do house chores. Thank you very much. So her mother's like, you're not getting any allowance this week. Oh, okay. But right around, right before Christmas, mother would give her some money so she could go out and buy presents for the rest of the family. And this was her shopping spree. And so we'd give her like a, you know, in those days, you know, things were cheap. We'd give her a couple of dollars and she'd go out and buy something like a pair of socks for daddy, or, you know, and something, you know, just little trinkets and so forth for family members. And so she went with her little purse with her little change in it, about $2 or $3 in change, really proudly going in. And she went into the, and of course the first place that where's a child going to go, she went to the comic book stand, right? And so she got into reading comic books. And when she was done reading comic books, she realized that the little purse that she had put right there was gone. Now she didn't have any money at all to buy any presents. She came home crying. She felt so much shame. It was stolen from her. She felt loss. She felt scarcity. From that point on, she was stuck in the money issue. Fear about, oh, I've got to get money and I've got to hold on to it or I'll lose it. I've got to be responsible for it. If I miss a beat, if I'm not perfect, something bad's going to happen and I'm going to lose my money. I'm going to not be able to. People won't like me. I got stuck in that one for years. So children have their experience. Sometimes children's experience is that their parents don't have enough money. And the parents complain about money. Or the parents give children money and say, this is really hard-earned money. You'd better appreciate it. You better be grateful. I have a dollar. You want me to be grateful? I don't understand. Isn't it about just giving and receiving? Isn't money just to give and receive? Children don't really get the concept. And whatever you learned in your household, there was some dysfunction in there somewhere. Right? And if only your parents had an infinite amount of money, and you as a child had infinite amounts of money, only would that be solved. As a teenager, money was a way to buy friends and nice stuff and gadgets and clothes and things like that that the other teens would admire or whatever, maybe to help position you in the popularity contests. And it also to enable you to do things that were of interest to you, because that's where your interests began to arise. If you didn't have money, you couldn't pursue your interests, unless they were academic. Because you could pursue your academic interests at the library. And that didn't cost anything. But if it was something else, like maybe playing a musical instrument and getting lessons, your parents had to pay for that. If they didn't have the money, well, you could maybe, you know, get into the band and maybe the school would loan you an instrument. You know, there's all sorts of compensations. And the poor kids just didn't have the advantages that the wealthy kids had. Maybe you were a wealthy kid. Maybe you got plenty of things. You began to get this illusion that there was going to be plenty of money and you just wanted to be the dilettante the rest of your life because it was such a heck of a lot of fun. I can go into this interest and my parents will pay for it. Oh, what fun. And then adulthood came and hit you with a hard, cold water of reality, right? Here's where you had to get into the world. Somehow or another, you had to set up your adult situation. Either a job, or you had to get a marriage, or you had to find your own place and find some source of revenue. You had to do this or that or the other, or continue to go to school indefinitely, whatever it was. You had to set yourself up so that you could be independent. Yeah, maybe sometimes you had to, you know, still live under your parents' roof while you were going to college or something like that to save money. But here is where you began to dream. Dream big dreams. Big dreams that had lots of money in them, just implied. I'll be able to do this, and I'll be rich, and I'll live in this beautiful house by this river, and, you know, this and this, and I'll travel, and I'll see the world, and I'll blah, 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 blah. When you dream these dreams, you don't imagine for a moment that you're going to be poor or lack the funds or it's not going to happen. You have a great imagination. Somehow a miracle will occur. Somehow I'll find the right job. Somehow I'll find a mentor. Somehow I'll find a rich person to grant me some money. Oh, all the fantasies that go on there. Because you don't really know how the world works. You haven't been out in it long enough. You have a fantasy about how it should work for you. Generally, the disillusionment sets in somewhere in your 40s. When you finally realize it never worked quite. And the way you got it going was that you didn't really have the motivation. You loved the dreaming, but you didn't love the action. You didn't love the doing, because your reality, your consensus was requiring of you that you choose one thing and stick to it. What's a creative person to do? Yeah. And creativity requires lots of different things. What about someone who just loves to grow and to explore and so on? It has to stop somewhere in the 20s. As you go into the 30s, you got to settle down. You got to get on some track. And then the slave driver comes and says, I will enforce it. You create the slave driver within you. Just as you created your internal parent or your conscience, right? So that you could guilt trip yourself, right? You did such a good job. So the slave driver is a more sophisticated version. We're going to scare the bejesus out of you and make you get off your butt and earn that money. And earn approval. And earn. Follow through, damn it. Stay focused. Keep your eye on the wheel or what? I don't know, whatever. Shoulder to the wheel? How do you do that? Nose to the grindstone. Oh, gosh. Eyes on the prize. Very good. Thank you. You probably have a long list of these, don't you? And it's in young adulthood, in that period of the 20s and 30s, you reach for your dream. You have a big dream. You're going to make a big deal. Make $1 million. You're going to be rich before you're 30. And you're going to work with these people and these people, idea people. They're all going to get together. You're going to do something great. Something creative, something great for the planet or something. And then you get started in it. And nobody wants to do the work. But you like to sit there and dream how important you're going to be and what impact you're going to have and what a great gift you are to the planet and how you're going to have all this money rolling in to have foundations to give to worthy people to do great things. This is a young adult dream. It's a typical one. And then nothing seems to happen. It keeps fizzling and remorphing into some other kind of focus. And then you get together, and that doesn't seem to work, and you can't seem to rely on your partners. They don't seem to be doing the follow-through, and they say, we're going to do this and this, and then they don't do it, and then you go, what? And you end up being the only one that's doing anything, and you don't. And you say, yeah, I'll do such and such, and then you don't want to do it. So the question is, Are you going to bring in the slave driver now and force everybody in their slave driver to push through? No, nobody wants to do it. What the slave driver says is, you're wasting your time here. You need to get a good job and you need to put your nose to the grindstone, right? You need to be a regular person. You're not exceptional. You're not the great genius after all. Sorry. You gotta get your life together. You gotta be practical. You gotta be grounded. You gotta start your family. Don't delay. Clock is ticking. Whatever. Slave driver gets you on a track. And it's damn hard once you're on that track to get off of it. And all of you have had to suffer that track, whatever it was. However limited or expansive, some of you have made good money on your track. But it's still a track. It still is a narrow window of possibility, a narrow passageway. It is your way of earning money. It's your way of serving, your way of positioning yourself, of valuing yourself in the world so that you might be able to survive, to be given enough money to live well. This is a contract with money. He said, listen, money, I'll do this. I'll do all of this so that I can survive. And somewhere down the line, I will be free. Somewhere down the line, I will spiritually awaken. And for many people of spiritual temperament, they look to their retirement for that. When I finally don't have to work and be a slave to this money thing, finally I'll be able to do my spiritual thing. And the young adult part of you comes in and says, and then you'll do these great things for the planet. And the slave driver comes in and says, well, I'm watching. And we have to make sure that you stay on track. You still haven't fulfilled all those dreams of your 25-year-old. You still have to fulfill those dreams. You still don't have that great house. You still don't have that wonderful creative workshop. You still don't have whatever it is that you wanted there in the way that you wanted it, with the glorious abundance that you wanted. We're going to make sure you stay on track. Don't get diverted. And so retirement, age where you wanted to retire. Yes, you wanted to retire early so that you could do what you wanted to do. Early retirement time came, what is it, 50, 55, whatever, sometimes 45. And you realize, I'm no closer to retirement than I was 10, 15, 20 years ago. I got to keep working. I got to stay on my track. I'm not there yet. I haven't gotten it. I don't have permission to take time off and dream. And dear ones, we want you to understand, because of your spiritual disposition, because you are choosing a lifetime of spiritual progress, your temperament is not the workaholic temperament. You can do it for periods of time without suffering too much. But eventually you have to stop. The workaholic is the ultimate slave driver fantasy in the man code, positioned high up in the pecking order. It is the noble man who's closest to God is the great workaholic, CEO, whatever, making tons of money up there. That's the ultimate. And you go ask that guy up there who's making tons of money. And he says, still not enough. It's not enough. I got to do more. I got to make more. I got to make more. What if I lose this? What if people don't buy my product? What if? I got to make more. I got to make more. I got to go overseas. I got to control the world. I've got to get more. I got to go higher up in the pecking order. I got to be more important. I've got to influence more government people. I've got to. It'll never stop. Slave driver never stops. Stop it now. This weekend, you're going to stop the slave driver. This weekend, you're going to change your relationship to money. You're going to create new channels of giving and receiving. And one of the things we notice is because of all this crap that's come down, you have a really hard time receiving. Receiving has been so manipulated, you might say. When we tuned in to you, we noticed that every one of you, in one way or another, resisted receiving. Either you were suspicious of it. You thought, well, if I receive something, then I'm obligated, I have to earn it. I don't know how to receive. I have to earn. If I earn, I'm still powerful. If I receive, that puts me one down. I owe somebody something. I'm vulnerable. I can be manipulated. I'm also powerless somehow. They have the power. Giving is, it's better to give than receive. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, but if everybody's giving, who's receiving? You have to have a receiver. You need to be a receiver. You don't have to give and receive equally. Some people say, well, okay, if I give this, then you can give me that. Now that's an exchange. Now I feel safe. Other people feel that to receive means that they're going to be directed, their attention is going to be directed in ways they don't want. You know, if you give me this, then you're going to have strings attached somewhere in there. So I'm going to have to look in your direction at what it is you're interested in. I'm going to be manipulated by you. So it's like there's a lot riding on receiving. And because of that, and because you have an issue around receiving money for just being yourself, right? How is it possible somebody could come and give you money for nothing? Oh, that doesn't happen? What would it feel like? See, that's what why people play the lotto, right? It would feel like $1 ticket. And maybe I could win, $1 million. That'd be free money. Let me go there. That feels so nice. That'd be so nice. You can get lost in fantasy with receiving as well. Thinking about what receiving is, not recognizing receiving is that exchange. You give freely, you receive freely. And each one of you has a receiving room. We call it a receiving room. It's your, what you might say, your profile of receiving. It's in your psyche. There's this room, there's this space where you receive. You know, it's like in a business you've got, or an industry, you've got a receiving docks. You know, there's the area, it's a big warehouse where you receive all the shipments that come in. In your own psyche, you've got a receiving room where all the shipments come in. And some of you, the receiving room is closed. The door's shut. Nope, I'm not going to be manipulated. I've got boundaries. I'm my own person. Thank you very much. You can't buy my vote. And some of you, you've got it open just a little crack. And you say, okay, and you peep out. Is it safe? And somebody knocks at the door. I have something for you. Yeah. You say very tentatively, yeah, is it safe? Uh-huh. Yeah, what is it? I got to know all of what it is. I'm not going to open the door and let you in, but I've got to know everything that you're bringing so I can evaluate if it's okay. You have different ways of approaching receiving. The most successful people on the planet, the ones who seem to have no problems with money, are the ones whose receiving rooms are wide open. And a lot of you have receiving rooms that's filled with old crap. Things that you received, kind of, and you just never used, and it was just crap. Just remnants of childhood and just gunk in there. And some of you received relationships and scholarships and awards and stuff, and just ends up as like old boxes filled with stuff in your receiving room. Well, yeah, well, that didn't go so well, so I have to be real careful what I receive now. I'm going to monitor really much more carefully. I'm not just going to let stuff come in willy-nilly. And what if people are negative? I'm going to get stuck with their negativity. Right. I can't let that happen. What if people hurt me? I can't receive from them. That's too painful. Better not receive much. You know, really just stay on top of this and just make sure that I've got my walls up really nicely and securely. Now I'm safe. I'm protected. That's got to come down, dear ones, that wall. Your receiving room needs to be cleaned up and opened up. And you need to learn how to make it safe to receive. That's what we want to do also this weekend. So you see, we have a good agenda for you. And that's just some of it. What we want to do more than anything else, which you might find quite fascinating, is we want to do some brain work with you. Your brain, you see, when you are an adolescent, puts together, you know, you as a child and as an adolescent, you're building new brain pathways like gangbusters. Because you're exploring, learning, tasting, touching, everything. It's all coming in and your brain is finding all sorts of different possibilities. You're talented, you're gifted, you can experience things. You know, the tradition of how when you go into puberty, how you have like psychic awakenings, all sorts of stuff. That your brain is opening up and allowing more receiving. Your brain is opening up to allow more possibility for you. But by the time you're in your 20s and you and your slave driver get together and hook up and get you on track, your brain begins to dismantle the pathways you have not chosen. You start to lose possibilities. Things start to focus on and the pathways start to organize around money in a warped way. Now, you always are building more pathways in your brain, but not at the rate you were then. And what did you know about money then? Crap, right? All sorts of assumptions. You were bought into it, or you resisted, or you rebelled against it, whatever you did. Some of you, spiritual egos, like, well, I'm not going to be a slave to money. No, no, no way. I'm going to get my money easy and spiritually. And I'll show everybody else how you're supposed to do it. You're trapped just as well. Because then anything that comes to you goes to your negative ego. And you lose your boundaries. You lose your integrity. And in judgment, you stick yourself. So you need some freedom here, some freedom from all of that crap. And to do that, what we would like to do is to take you on a little meditation. Let's see, are we going to have time?
25 minutes.
We've got 25 minutes. All right, yes. So let's take you on a little meditation and then there'll be a break. Let yourself get comfortable and close your eyes. And this is a working meditation. And by that, we mean it's important for you to be involved and engaged in it. It's not going to be, like when we do the brain work, you can just go right off if you want, but this one is a strategic one. What we're going to ask you to do, as you have closed your eyes and maybe take a little breath to kind of center yourself and ground yourself and prepare yourself to do something, is to remember, just remember your childhood. When you were a child, what the money circumstances were there? What would it have been like if there had been infinite money resources around as a child? Don't think of it really difficult, but just feel how different it would feel from what you had if it was infinite. And now, some people had parents with tremendous amounts of money, but not necessarily generous. Just imagine, you know, a child not being interested in responsibility in the least, of course. What would it be like if the parents had just every dollar imaginable, every amount of money imaginable, and were generous, totally generous? It would be a different feeling. See, when you remember your childhood, you remember a feeling about money. With plenty of money, all the money you can have, it's a different feeling. That's all you're looking for, sensing for, is a feeling, a perception of it would be different. Now go to your adolescence, your teenage years. What would it have been like if you had been a multimillionaire as a teenager? Again, teenagers are not particularly into responsibility. They just want to have fun. What would you do with all that money? And how much fun could you have had? And what if your parents had plenty of money and you lived in a great, beautiful place? You could do anything you wanted, go anywhere. It's a different feeling than what adolescence was. Heck, you don't have to have any enemies in school. You can just buy them off. No. How wouldn't that feel good? So just sense the old adolescence, the way that you kind of perceive it as it was with money, and then what it would be like if there was plenty of it. And then, as you can just feel that, oh, yeah, that's, wow, I feel more powerful and free and, yeah. Now go to your 20s, where you were really trying to find out who you were, what you were interested in, what you really wanted to do, really did your exploration. And then there was this time where you began to dream, this is what I need. You dream your track somewhere in your 20s, perhaps into the late 20s, early 30s. Here's what I need to do. I need to get on this track to be happy, to be fulfilled, to make good money, etc., etc. And the slave driver came in. Yeah, that's not feeling so good. Yeah, there was optimism, there was good stuff in there, but there was also some dark stuff. Now imagine, what would it have been like if you just had all the money you wanted from the get-go? You went through your whole 20s totally rich. You could do anything you wanted, however you wanted, with whomever you wanted, wherever you wanted. How different would that feel? And then, between young adulthood and wherever you are now, there may be one or more places, one or more arenas in which you went through money stuff the self that you were at 36, for example, or 42. Or the big change that came in your life at 53 or wherever. All the way up to wherever you are now. There are places where you had to compromise. You had to adjust. You found some effort with money and resentment at having to give so much of your energy to earn, and then when you get the money, to earn it again and keep earning and keep earning so you don't lose it. Now imagine, what if you just had loads of money all the way through? What difference would that make? How would that have felt? What would different would you believe about money? What differently would you do? You see, you've made money your force for change and growth. You've made money your commission of challenge. That which makes you grow spiritually, makes you responsible on a spiritual level. What if you could have done that on your own, proactively, and the money would just have flown in? What would that feel like? So now we suggest that you imagine yourself in a room, a nice sized room. And in this room will be several figures from your past. Your child self, a teenage representative, one of the selves you were in your 20s, and maybe a few others from since then to now. And they're lined up waiting for you. And there's a big table next to them. And behind each one of them is a door. And on this table are these little machines. They look kind of like miniature cash registers. There's a little lever, and you put a little lever down, and a little drawer comes out. You go to your child, sitting there, not knowing quite what to expect. And you get the first one of these money machines, and you hand it to your child self and say, "Here, for you. Every time you pull this lever down, a $50 bill comes out. Or 20. For a child, maybe 20. It's infinite. You can keep cranking it as many times as you want. It'll never run dry. This is for you. And in exchange, I ask for something. I ask that you take this into your life. And you don't trigger me with overwhelm and fear and panic about money, about the scarcity and the powerlessness that you feel about it. Here, have a money machine, as much as you want, whenever. Now, you love this younger self of yours, but this self has really snagged you at times. Made you feel very alone and scared and helpless. So you open the door behind the child. And that door leads to the child's ideal world, where the parents are happy and loving, the home is wonderful and harmonious, great playmates, perfect situation, everything's great, plenty of money for everybody. and the child and the money machine go to the door. And the child says, okay, this sounds like fun. You say, I'll come visit, but don't come into my life. I'll take care of it. I'm the adult. Okay, says the child. And the child walks through the door into its perfect life. You close the door behind it and turn to the adolescent. The adolescent's eyes are large. Oh, that looks great. You're going to give me money? Yes. And you hand the adolescent the money machine and say to it, all right, I'm the adult. I'll take care of money from here on. But here's money for you, and it's infinite every time you put the lever down. It's a 50. And you can do it as many times as you want. Oh, goody, says the adolescent. You open the door to the adolescent's perfect life. And the adolescent takes the machine and goes running out the door. Oh, so excited. What all adventures your adolescent is going to do. And you close the door. And you turn to the young adult. You say, look, I've got this money machine for you too. And you can fulfill all your dreams and fantasies. The young adult smirks and says, well, when I pull the lever, will $100 bill come out? And you say, yes, as many as you want, to infinity. But I'm the adult. I'll take care of money from here on. You go have a good time. Is that agreed? Young adult says, yes. Oh, absolutely. You open the door, the young adult's perfect fantasy life. Out the door they go, hugging the machine. You close the door behind the young adult. And you look at those who are remaining. And the number of them there exactly match the number of money machines still left on the table. So you hand each one of them a money machine. And you say, look, I'm the adult now. I'm the current, present self. I'll take care of money from here on out. Don't worry about me. Don't try to help me. Don't try to interfere with me. Don't try to give me the old beliefs, the old stories. Don't point out how it's gone wrong in the past and how it could possibly go wrong again. I'll take care of it all. I have new resources. I'm ready to go on. Take these money machines and just have a wonderful time. And don't think about me anymore. Just have whatever it is you wish. And they're pretty thankful. Hey, this is great. You open a door or two or three or four, and they go through it. You close the doors behind them. And now you're alone in this room. This room of the present moment. You're in this room and surrounded by a sky filled with stars. Friends who have come to be with you. Your friends, your spirit helpers, your guides, your aspects of you from other dimensions and levels. Spiritual family members. They all gather around as sparks of light. Twinkling, winking their love at you. And some of them gather together above you and make a great star, the way that we show ourselves as we are a group. And this great star above you sends a beam of light down to you that when it reaches you is a column of light that surrounds you. And here in this present moment, as we surround you and we love you, let us take off of you. Let us drain off of you all your money worries. Let us just take it, all the stress around money, you have in your life right now. All the concerns about what to do it, how to make more, all of that, just let it go into the light that surrounds you. Let us take it. That's it. Just let it bleed out, or like a smoke come out of you. All the security fears out of your root chakra. All the misalignments of your passion. All the worries about, can you make money on your passion? Or not being connected to your passion. Let us just take that out. Third chakra, all the sense of power that was lost to money. Or it might be lost money right now. Just give it to us. We can seal that chakra. Stop the flow. Heart chakra. Thinking that you must want money, you must desire money to make it. No, money's an illusion. All the efforting, all the attachment to it, all the issues around it, let it go. Throat chakra. All the beliefs about it. All the diminishment of your will and choice. And your individuality and your creativity. Let it go. Third eye, all the images that you have of the future, all the issues of money from the past projected into the future. Let's clear it out. Just let them go. Let them go. All those limiting beliefs and expectations and assumptions about the consensus supporting you or not supporting you, or being looked at as weird or strange, or just finding it hard to bring your message through, or your image out there, your visibility. Let it go. And now crown chakra. Some of your receiving stopped here. A crown chakra partially closed, not opening to the divine juice that is you. So let that limitation go. Open your crown chakra. Yeah, there we go. And know that it's your choice to be free of the money trap, of the codes, free from the fear and the guilt motivation around it, free from sacrificing to it. There's a new freedom that you can claim now by loving yourself. It is your choice. You have the power to choose freedom. With money. Choose. I choose. I choose freedom with money. Say it mentally to yourself. I choose to love myself. And let yourself just feel all clean. And our light turns into green, a green flame that just burns all the rest of it off. All the limitations around money just burns it all off. And you become clean, limpid, empty. Empty of money programs, just empty and free. Let yourself come back now. And just retain that kind of sense of emptiness. It may be disorienting. Opening your eyes gently. You may feel just a little disoriented. All right. We want you to see a list of beliefs. We have a list of beliefs for you. And during the break, look at the list of beliefs and make sure that you're all clear from all these beliefs. And if there are other beliefs that you've held that are limiting, write them down and claim them. See if there's anything that still might want to stick you. And after the break, we'll let all of that go too. So, 20 minutes?
20 minutes.
All right.
3 minute warning.
All right. Farewell for now.